Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Saturday, usually from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, where we are rebroadcast on a2zen.fm. You want to check their listings because the program is moved around from time to time, so we encourage you to do that, as well as archiving our programs on our website, richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So lots of opportunities for you to hear the program as well, so we want you to do just that. Beautiful day here on the Central Coast. We are live today. I don't know how this happened, but there is no ball game during our time slot today. So we are actually live here on November the 9th, 11-9-13, all odd numbers. I don't know what that means. It's just a pattern I see. And so there you go. I'm always... not always looking for patterns, but they always pop up. And that is the pattern I see. Odd numbers for the day, month, and year that we're broadcasting here. And 3 p.m., it's an odd number as well. I don't know what it means. I just bring it to your attention. Well, a quick live Angus update. Had a little injury the other day. He banged himself against a fence going after his soccer ball, his beloved. I think that if he could take it in the house, we don't let him, he would sleep with it. It would be like his teddy bear. Absolutely loves that ball. And he injured his hip on the right side, limping around a little bit. He's doing much better. He wants to run and play now. It's only been about 4 days. We're saying, you can play with your ball, but we are not going to get back into the routine until next week. So letting him heal up quite well. And very happy that things are going well. We have paid our fuel bill for the wintertime. We don't use oil. We use firewood. We bought a half cord of wood the other day and stacked that up nice and neat. Well, we stacked it up anyway, and we're ready for winter burning and staying warm by the fireside and having a nice cozy evenings and that type of thing. I am so glad that you've joined us today, because today our program is going to surround the one thing that we all love and cherish and we can wrap our brains around, and that's one word. And you're going to love this word. No, it is not love. It's change. You don't like that word? You don't like change? I thought you enjoyed change. I thought you enjoyed how things transitioned. Nothing's permanent. Everything's temporal. I thought we were all trained and well-equipped to deal with the changes that come our way. Well, you know I'm being facetious, and my guest knows that too. And I have to be honest say, Suzanne, that I did not get the correct pronunciation of your last name. And I want to welcome you to our program. And by the way, are you in the UK tonight?
No, I'm at home in Italy.
You're in Italy.
I'm very close to my favorite city in the world, Venice.
Oh my! Well, you sound quite British, yet.
That's because I am half British.
I see. And how do you pronounce your last name?
Axisa.
So it's Suzanne Axisa.
Susanna Axisa.
Susanna.
Yes. Yes, good Italian name.
And well, we are so glad that you've joined us, and I thank you so much for staying up so late their Italian time to join us here on the program. We've had a few guests who have done the same thing. And you are someone who has developed a process, if you will, to help people to better cope with, to better, I don't know, understand, deal with the one constant in the universe that happens sometimes on a daily basis in our lives, and that is change. I mean, I don't know of any other subject that, other than crisis management, that the planet Earth could hold on a galactic seminar basis for the rest of the universe. Those would be the two subjects. We don't deal with change real well, but we do deal with crisis management.
I think I think actually it's a continuum, two different ends of the scale of change.
Okay. Well, let's talk about why this is so important to you.
Why is it so important? Because I have undergone absolutely massive changes in my life. The biggest change has been, if you like, healing my psyche. As a psychologist, you'd say that I've been learning emotional intelligence, because it's certainly something I wasn't. Well, I was taught as a child, but I was taught the crisis management aspect of emotional intelligence. So, very dysfunctional, very defensive. And all of the families that I grew up with, not just my birth family, but all of the others that took me in for a while, all seemed to be hugely, and I mean seriously, dysfunctional. So that was my modus operandi. So the biggest change in my life has been step by step, sometimes a leap, sometimes a baby step, sometimes a sparrow step. Making the changes that have brought me into emotional health and a back to a strong reconnection with my intuition.
You host a radio program called Lantos Lantern.
I did host it until the beginning of this year.
All
I
right.
hosted it for 5 years. It started out as, if you like, a simple channeling program. I channel an ascended master whose name is Lord Lanto, who at the moment is being represented by the soul who was Lao Tzu in a previous life. As my self-compassion grew, then I think the program reflected the changes that were going on in me, and ended up for the last 2 or 3 years as a book review program. I didn't do the channeling anymore. I have the student as one of my eternal archetypes, and so I just love learning. And so, what better way to learn relatively for free than to have a book review program on all things in the human potential movement? So that's what I did, and then I decided at the end of last year that it was really time to let it go and choose an easier way to do radio work for me that didn't involve so much work. Because to do one book review program involves usually reading something like 3 books. And I read them. I didn't skim them. I didn't use the author's prepared questions. I read the books and said, there's no script here. You know, we're just going to go with whatever. I have certain things that I want to ask you about that have piqued my interest, or I think that will really interest the listeners from what I've read. Is that okay with you? Yeah, fine. And then we'll just go with the flow. So it was an awful lot of work, and I love doing radio work. But if you're reading, you know, 3 books to do one review book program a week, it actually takes an awful lot of time away from you. And time that you would otherwise spend in developing new programs, new products, new services, and all of that. So, and also I'd had a period of illness, so it was time really to say goodbye to hosting, hello to guesting.
You know, getting back to the subject of change in regards to all of this, obviously you have gone through innumerable changes, even in short periods of time. And in spite of the fact that we deal so poorly with it as individuals, we're sure, certainly in this day and age, here in the 21st century, we're sure going through a lot of them. And for the most part, I'd still say that the majority of us are, well, we're still alive, we're still breathing, you know, we're still, you know, crawling to the next mile marker, if you will, in our lives, in spite of the fact that all around us, the financial world is changing, the healthcare world is changing, our families might be changing, et cetera, et cetera. Yet there are, I also know too, Susanna, that there are people that say, I've had enough of change and I'm checking out, and they do, and which is kind of sad as well.
I don't. I just think that that's the way it is. But I'd like to come back to you, Richard, because I think you may make a very interesting point about change. And there's something that I have. In Italy, we say we learn it through our skin. And it means that, it's something, it's a visceral experience for mm-hmm. us.
Yeah.
The really, really fascinating thing that I find about change, particularly in my work with clients, is how many of us forget that by the time we're 18, we're already experts in change, but we forget just how expert we are. Because by the time we're 18, we may have changed parents or one parent. We will have, most of us will have changed home. We'll certainly have changed school several times. We'll have changed friends. We'll have changed body completely. We may have changed where we live. By the time we get to 30, we'll have changed partners. We'll have changed even more homes. We'll have changed jobs. We'll have changed life. We'll have changed so many things, but because we go through them in a period of intense growth, we don't recognize that we are innately change experts. So when it comes to change, we fight it.
Well, now that's interesting. You say that on the one hand, we go through all of these changes and we become change experts. Mm. And yet it sounds to me like, but on the mental, emotional level, we fight it from that standpoint, in spite of the fact that the reality is we're going through it and so forth. So you say you learn it through the skin, the Italian phrase.
Yeah.
It's a very visceral thing. We feel it. I mean, physically, the senses, we feel it. Mm. But it is that internal, mental, emotional aspect that is where the catch is for us. That's where we get stuck, right?
I think it's a sort of cultural inheritance. I mean, I don't teach intuition because I believe that you can't teach intuition because it's something that's innate. What you can do is free the blocks to our intuition so that you get people to recognize it, trust it, and use it with confidence. Mm. So a major part of my work, which I split into two, is I teach emotional intelligence. And then when you've got a healthy basis for that, then I move to sensory intelligence. And I think it has to do with a lack of training, if you like, and a lack of seeing the potential in change that we're not encouraged to see, and we're not taught how to see when we're children. So we grow up to fear it. And what we forget is, despite all of those fears, we survive and life gets better and opens up more, usually, as a result of those changes.
Yeah, and that's
so when we reframe and we look back at what we've done and all of the changes that we've not only met but we've lived through and we've opened ourselves up to, and therefore opened ourselves up more fully to our lives, then we can begin the process of not being so afraid of change. But change triggers fear. It is the thing that is the biggest trigger of fear in our lives today. And yet, as you said a little earlier, you know, there are all these changes going on around us. I believe that's also a sign of, you know, as above, so below, what's going on within us is being reflected outside of us.
Hmm.
So it's not so much that we're standing still.
Right.
I think it's much more that we still struggle to find, usually, a language that allows us to see our achievements around change.
I will liken it to an analogy. I am a factory worker and I make widgets, and I make them well, and I make them fast, and I make them good. And I'm afraid of making widgets. That's almost what I'm hearing, is that we go through change, we survive change, and we're blastedly fearful of the change that we go through and we survive. What a paradox.
Well, it is. And I just think it's like so many of our behaviors. And that is, we meet it with fear and yet we survive it. But we don't in some way allow ourselves, because we don't recognize what we've done. We don't allow ourselves to reframe it in a much more empowering way.
Is it kind of like not seeing the forest for the trees?
It's not seeing the forest for the trees, but it's also this tendency to go with the emotion, accept the emotion, and not consciously choose another one. And that has everything to do with our emotional intelligence. We still feel that we are victims of our emotions. But if you talk to neuroanatomists, there's a brilliant one, and I get her double-barreled surname round the wrong way. So it's either Jill Taylor-Bolte or Jill Bolte-Taylor. She wrote a brilliant, brilliant book called My Stroke of Insight. Neuroanatomist, had a rare form of stroke and spent 8 years recovering a full functioning brain. And this book is an absolute revelation. But one of the things I came away from this book with was the absolutely amazing piece of information that when a fear or a stress is triggered in our bodies, the body responds for 90 seconds by flooding us with the stress chemicals, adrenaline, cortisol, et cetera, et cetera. After that 90 seconds, the body has flushed out of it all the stress chemicals. So after 90 seconds, we have a choice. Do I want to stay with this emotion that will recreate stress in me every 90 seconds? Or do I want to choose something else? We cannot choose our emotions because they happen automatically, but we can choose our response to the emotions. And it's what we don't do, many of us, with change.
You are also an NLP practitioner, and I met a woman years ago who is also adept in this, but I never went through any of the processes, nor really sat down and was able to really fully understand. And you're starting, it sounds to me like you're starting to go in that direction as far as the explanations you're giving with the neurology of dealing with change. Can we dive into that just a little bit? Because I'm very curious as to what neuro-linguistic programming is all about.
Well, I am not, I don't really work as an NLP practitioner. I use it in my work as an intuition and human potential coach.
Okay.
But I mix it with strength psychology, so you work to your strengths, obviously, and I mix it with any neuroscience or epigenetics that I can get my hands on that will help. So my an NLP reframe is based on an anchor, okay? And the anchor is find a good moment and recreate it and recreate it and recreate it and recreate it so often that you can, in a very short space of time, recall that happy moment really easily. And that's what NLP uses to get you to a situation where you are coherent enough and lucid enough. It would be the better word, lucid enough to be able to then choose what you want to do with the emotion that has just knocked you for six.
Well, it seems to me that there is a lot of this kind of thing going on. I'm seeing some documentaries, and I'm hearing talking with other people in regards to reframing even those events in our past that were traumatic, that generated the fears we experience today, especially in terms of and relating to change, the issues of change. And one of the thoughts that came to me, came to mind as we were chatting here was that years ago, I finally grasped an awareness as I was working over a period of maybe 6 or 9 months at a radio station, that when the dust was beginning to settle, when the workload was beginning to get somewhat routine, when it was beginning to calm, when things were beginning to feel calmer, change was right around the corner. And I don't know if anybody else has those kinds of experiences. Now, in the day-to-day, over those, say, 9 months, were there changes that were happening? Sure, there were. But they weren't the kinds of changes that most people would fear. Okay? You know, I'm going to turn left on this street instead of turning right. You know, those kinds of things will happen all day. I'm going to get chunky peanut butter versus creamy, but I love creamy peanut butter. I'm not afraid of that either. Whereas the radio station is being sold and everyone is being let go. Now, if that does not, now for some people that won't instill fear because it's like, oh, it's about time. I hate working here and I can hardly wait to get out and find something better. And of course, I would say, why did you wait until the job was eliminated? But again, I've also heard, well, there's also universal timing as well. But, you know, I just kind of picked up on that in that particular period of time. Whereas nowadays, I mean, it's literally day in, day out or week in, week out. There's something that happens that's out of the norm that you don't expect. What I'm finding, and I don't know if you find this true or not, Susanna, are there changes happening in people's lives that they're happening so fast that maybe they really don't even have time to feel anything about them or think much about them because they've got to keep moving forward? Not that that's necessarily the best way to deal with it.
I would say yes. I think it depends on your level of self-awareness very often. But yes, I think that a certain sector of the population might feel swept along almost on a tidal wave. And simply finding themselves in a situation where it's one foot in front of the other, no time to think, you just have to react from your gut. And there are others who are very aware, they're watching for synchronicities, they're watching for confirmation, they're watching for the ways in which, if you like, the universe is constantly communicating with us. So there are those who have a say in the way they change. And there are those who I think feel more swept along with it. And I'm not, and what I don't want to give the impression of is it's not just one group always feels as though they have a say and the other group doesn't. I think it's completely interchangeable depending on our personal, the way that we as individuals choose to live our lives and our various blind spots.
When we come back from our break, Susanna, I want to talk about, number one, one of the things that you just said, universal connection or communication. I also want to talk about the relationship between past, present, and future choices and change. But before any of that, and even before we go to our break, how can people get in touch with you? What is your website?
My website is very simple. I am The Gap Coach. And if you go to www.thegapcoach.com, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Pinterest, all under The Gap Coach. Go find me.
All right, Susanna, we can find you at, again, thegapcoach.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we will be right back.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Professional glassblower and craftsman Saul Alcaraz of Santa Barbara Art Glass can teach you to make that special gift for that special someone.
I guarantee that if you come in here, you will make paperweights, tumblers, or a mug, a bowl. You will get it done on your first lesson, even if you've never done it. Guarantee.
If I wanted to learn how to blow glass, what do I need to come to Saul with?
You gotta be extremely hyper, especially if you're gonna be doing it professional. You only have like 5 seconds to work with. If you wanna create art and sculpting and all that kind of stuff, then it's not a problem. You can take your time. Glass will not break.
Can people come by the shop unexpected?
I like it when they come in unexpected, and they'll probably bring some good energy in. Our studio, it's at 706 East Mason Street, 2 blocks from Miotas in Santa Barbara.
How do people get a hold of you?
Check out my website, sbrglass.com, or call us at 805-965-1541.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Rupa Chari bring you this health tip.
Here's today's Chari Center of Health quick tip for weight loss. Make a commitment today to make good health and body fitness a priority in your life. Health is a priceless gift and is wealth. We are committed to enhancing your health. Start the day right and eat breakfast. Your mom was right. A good healthy breakfast gets your metabolism kicked off for the day. Eating breakfast is good for weight loss. In fact, people who eat breakfast are more likely to maintain a healthy weight. People falsely believe that skipping breakfast is a strategy for losing weight, but that's not true. The body needs to be refueled a few times each day, starting with breakfast. When you skip breakfast, you are more likely to become tired because your brain and body run low on fuel. Studies have shown that children who eat breakfast actually do better in school. Of course, the same logic applies to adults, since you both feel better and perform better at work.
Making a healthy breakfast, what should you eat? Ideally, a healthy breakfast should contain both protein and fiber. Protein can come from eggs or beans. Fiber can be found in whole grains, vegetables, and fruits. A good example of a healthy breakfast might be something simple, like a hard-boiled egg, an apple, and a bowl of oatmeal with a little cinnamon, or a whole grain cereal made with water. Avoid sugary cereals, syrups, pastries, and white breads because they are digested quickly, raise your blood sugar, cause weight gain, and will leave you feeling hungry and tired in a couple of hours, whereas protein and fiber satisfy your hunger and will keep you feeling full until lunchtime. Be good to yourself and know that eating a healthy breakfast is the best way to start off your day.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and it's great to have you with us here on the program as we continue talking with Susanna Axiza. And her website, again, is thegapcoach.com. The Gap Coach, what do you mean by the gap? I know we have the Gap stores here in the U.S., but that ain't what you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about several things, but I think the most important one, and the one I'm actually trying to finish an e-workbook on, is the gap between our subconscious and our conscious minds. And the conscious mind is obviously where we hold our aims, objectives, our intentions, and also our dreams, because we're aware of our dreams. And the subconscious mind is where we hold our habitual stuff. And because it's habitual, it just starts up and goes on its merry way without any interference from us. Mm-hmm. And so we have no say over what happens. And that that very quickly creates a chasm between what we know we're capable of somewhere deep within us and what we dream of doing and what we plan to do and what we actually do, because of the limiting scripts that are being rolled out day after day after day, moment after moment after moment, unfortunately, that are stopping us from being able to really make our dreams come true.
And that's part of what we're all about here in terms of giving people choices. And someone sitting there going, but Richard, before you went to break, you talked about two different questions you were going to ask her. And so I'll ask her. Let's go back to, we'll get to choices and change in a moment, but I want to get back to this whole business of universal communication, if you will. I want to have you describe that a little. I think I have an idea, but I want to have you describe that just a little bit more for us. What do you mean by that?
Oh, God, how long have you got?
Well, we have another 20 minutes here, but what we do at the end of this program, Susanna, we do what's called an afterview. And if you are willing and able, when we go off the radio, we can continue this interview, which will be available on the A to Zen as well as on the archive. I mean, we could have a full hour and a half program if that were the case. But I'm just, you know, in the next 5 or 10 minutes, if you need, talk a little bit about what you mean by that.
Okay, well, I'm not going to go into too much detail, so I'll just give you a few obvious things. And Jung came up with this brilliant word, synchronicity, meaningful coincidences. And that's, I'm thinking of something and I keep thinking of it, and perhaps it's a question that I don't understand. And so I go, oh, I'd really like to understand this. You know, what on earth is going on here? What does this mean? For example, let's take an example so that I can help you understand. The example is, I'm a woman. I attract men who are always emotionally unavailable. Okay, either because they're married, they have commitments elsewhere, they're workaholics, whatever, okay? So one day I sit up in my bed and go, what on earth is going on here? Why? Okay. And then I go on my merry way. I forget about that question I posed myself, and of course the universe was listening in. And I forget about the question that I've asked. And then suddenly I notice that I'm reading a book. And it says, you know, well, this man was emotionally unavailable and she wanted more and she deserved more. Aha, I may not have got it that time. So then I'm looking, I lived for 24 years in London, a city with huge red double-decker buses that have loads of advertising on them. So let's say I'm living in London and I see 20 buses going past me and they're all carrying the same advertisement, and it's all about a book. It's all for a book that's written about women who love the wrong men or whatever. And then I watch television one night and there's a television series on or a film on, and it's about a man who is in love with an unavailable woman or whatever. This is synchronicity. This is the way that the universe is communicating with you to say, here's your answer. This is why. What resonates with you? What gives you an aha moment? What turns that light bulb on inside of your head and go, oh, that's why I keep attracting the wrong man. So synchronicity is a great thing. You spoke at the very beginning of the program about the pattern in the 9, 11, 13. And what immediately came to me was the pattern was the space of two digits in between each number, 9 to 11, 11 to 13.
I would have gotten there eventually.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so you've got two twos, and two twos are a master number. So then all you have to do is, okay, I know about master numbers, but I don't know what 22 is. So you go on to Google, because Google, either Google or Wikipedia, can answer many things in life, if not all your questions. And you Google, you know, significance of master number 22.
Hmm. Okay.
And see, I mean, there's lots of stuff on the internet. I mean, I do that with master numbers, particularly triple numbers, because I know that they're hugely significant, but I always forget. And so I go on, and what you'll discover is that some sites you think, nah, don't really rate the value of this information. Other sites you'll go, yes, very interesting, but this doesn't resonate with me. And somewhere you will find a sentence, a phrase, you know, two words that you'll go, yes, that is communicating with me. That's my answer.
Hmm. Well, in addition to always seeing patterns in things, I also see colors and letters in numbers and letters in colors. Mm. Mm. And then, of course, you start putting those colors, those letters and numbers together, and they make different shades and hues and so on and so forth. I've done that, gosh, as long as I can remember, even as a little kid. But it's always fascinated me. And I've also noticed, too, I don't know about you, sometimes when I will look down at a clock, like I have a clock in front of me, a digital clock, a readout keeping me on time and so forth, or I'll turn on my phone and it'll display the time. A lot of times, and for a period of maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, I was seeing quadruple identical numbers, all fours, all threes, all twos, all ones, that kind of thing. Mm. And again, I don't know what that means. And I will also add to what you said at the beginning of the explanation of universal communication. I would rephrase the word coincidence. I don't use that pronunciation anymore. I now refer to it as coincidences. Semantics, maybe, but I don't believe in coincidence in the traditional sense. Things always coincide. Happen for a reason, even
Absolutely.
If we don't know what it is. And most of the time, we don't.
And that's why Jung came up with synchronicity.
Yeah.
To describe a meaningful,
yeah.
I mean,
that's
the
a
words
beautiful,
he had at the
yeah.
time were simply a meaningful coincidence. And another way in which the universe communicates with you is through what I call messengers. And this is one of the last things I teach in a 2-year Master of Intuition course. And it is, you know, recognize your messengers, because I have a sort of 3-time agreement with the universe, because I can be so focused on certain things that I'm not very present, because I can intellectually focus on what I'm studying on or on a piece of work I have to get done. And so I said to the universe, I don't deliberately mean to be obtuse, but I'm not always very good at being totally present to you. And so give me it 3 times. If you try to bring me a message once and I don't get it, don't give up on me, because, you know, I want to develop and fulfill my potential. I want to do what I came in to do. And so bring it to me a second time. Second time, there's more chance that I will understand. And if I don't, then I promise that I will tell my friends that I have a 3-time agreement with you. Mm. So they will help me. I promise that if you bring it to me the 3rd time, I will get it.
Mm.
And that's always what's happened. There are times when I haven't got the message the 1st time. There are times when I haven't got it the 2nd. But oh boy, have I got it the 3rd time. And I've always acted on it. And the message can come from someone just saying, why don't you?
Mm.
So remember that everybody around us, from
I don't know if you understand this word in America, from the dustman, the man, you know, the guys in the street that pick up all of the rubbish.
Oh, we call them garbage men or sanitation engineers.
Yes, yes, typical euphemism. What's wrong with rubbish, I have to say, anyway. But anyway,
rubbish by any other name.
You know, it can be someone who you deem in some way to be inferior to you or not your equal. It can be someone who seems to be above you in some way, is in a position of authority over you. It can be, again, a book, in the news, whatever. But, you know, the universe is constantly finding us a myriad of messengers. And often they're, you know, members of the family, friends, colleagues, people that we're around almost every day. And that something will just come out of their mouths. And if we're open to it, we'll go, wow, you've given me the confirmation of something I was thinking about but not sure of. Or you've given me my next step or whatever.
Yeah, it reminds me of information contained in James Redfield's Celestine Prophecy, where he talks about how each one of us has messages for one another.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
We must be open to those. The other aspect, too, in terms of universal communication is the aspect that it doesn't do anybody any good if you listen, if all you do is just listen to the still small voice. It doesn't do you any good.
No,
you've got to take some action or stop listening. Ignore it. Mm. I mean, it's kind of the admonition. It's like, if you're going to listen, then do something with it. If you're not going to do anything with it, then stop listening, because it's really not benefiting you. I mean, I say that tongue in cheek, mind you, but for some people, there's a lot of fear, obviously, I know, around the kind of guidance that they might be getting. It's like, oh, I can't do that. No, I can't do that, because I was told when I was a kid, you can't do that. And so, I mean, it's a big deal. Let's talk about this issue of change and choice. Now, as I say, one of our lines is we bring you choices and knowledge of those choices. And what I mean by that, Susanna, is there are things we don't know what we don't know. And that today I know of five different choices that I can make for this particular path. And between now and tomorrow, I may discover two more from totally different sources, such as yourself or someone else. I may get a message from someone else. And now I have seven. And that could build and so forth. And so we want to bring those to people's attention. They may have heard them before, and they may never have heard of them before. Doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is, if you know that there's a fork in the road, then you can choose. If you don't know there's a fork in the road, let's just say it's foggy and they say, keep to the right, just keep to the right and keep going. You'll be safe. You'll stay on the road as long as you keep to the right. But as soon as the fog lifts and you see that fork, you're going, oh, I wonder what's down there. Now, that would be interesting. And in terms of that and its relationship to change, and that they say that we are where we are today because of the choices that we made in the past. And if we want to be somewhere else in the future, we need to make different choices. But how does that relate to the issue of change, the subject of change that we experience on a day-to-day basis? Are we in control of the change?
That's our choice. If there's one thing I have learned in this lifetime, it is that everything we might, I don't call it a pre-birth contract, because contract is something that you can't get out of, or you can only get out of with a great deal of difficulty and some cost and a great investment of energy, which might more usefully be spent on other things. So contract to me is too binding. My understanding is that it's more an agreement. So an agreement we can change, an agreement will evolve. So it's much more fluid. And the agreement is simply a skeleton. And the skeleton is that we will choose certain of our gifts and we will come down and use them. Another part of the agreement is that we will share everything we have learned and acquired as wisdom before we leave the human container that we call our bodies. And the third thing is that we are here to collect experiences, not to judge them, but to collect them as many as possible and to understand why we've had them. Because it's the collection of experiences that develops our wisdom. And apart from those three things, everything else and how we do those three things, everything is a choice. And in fact, there is one form of what I call breakthrough intuition, which I call the friendly directions, which is all about choice. And it works with us when we forget, when we become unbalanced, when we're all work and no play, for example, when we're so concerned with the needs of the body, as we start to create a life for ourselves as young adults in particular, that we forget the needs of the soul, when we're so bogged down by responsibilities that we make no room for play and joy. Then this form of intuition that I call the friendly direction comes to work with us to say, hey, there's always a choice. And the choice is always designed to bring you back to balance, because balance is the word that sums up everyone and everything in the universe.
I have read over the years the whole concept of duality. It's Maya. It's an illusion. It's sometimes a delusion. One of my favorite comedians, Lewis Black, I love the way he phrases, it's a delusion. And it really is when you think about, black and white or up or down or what have you. Mm. And it's like, yeah, but when you talk about balance, well, now you're talking about, in a manner of speaking, and I say this more euphemistically, you're talking about being balanced. You're talking about, if you're talking about the extremes, let's just say on a teeter-totter of the left and the right, if you're right in the center, you're balanced. So you're centered, you're focused. There is no duality that is playing with you anymore, or that you are playing with anymore. I think that,
and
that's,
you need both, don't you, to be balanced?
You do. You can't have.
You need both.
I have to say that there have been times when I have listened to political programs or conservative and liberal radio programs, talk stations, and I have to say, in the last 10 years, I've come to the realization that until these people acknowledge the gift that the other side has given them. They wouldn't even have jobs. If the other side did not exist, they would have nothing to talk about. I mean,
it's never about an either or.
No.
It's always about an and, because that's the only way we ever achieve balance.
Yeah. I mean, right now in our country, our political system, they're not only not walking hand in hand, they're walking away from each other.
Try living in Italy.
I've read some of the stories. Let me tell you. But at least in Italy, they're much less prudish about some of the antics of their politicians than we are here. It's very strange, but nonetheless, this to me is fascinating. And again, let me just ask you, Susanna, if you are willing to hold over to what I like to call our after view finish the radio program. All right, fantastic. So
definitely. If
you're listening to atozen.com, or if you're listening to AM 1290 in Santa Barbara, California, you're not going to hear the entire interview, because we're going to go into the after view, which means you're going to have to go to the archives of richarddugan.com, the radio show page, and she's going to be at the top there. Susanna is going to be there, and she is going to, we're going to continue talking more about these aspects. The website, before I ask any further questions, is thegapcoach.com, where you can find out more. And we encourage you to do so. Who is Susanna Axiza?
Do you know, I've been asked that one before.
That's okay.
I love this. Part of me loves this question. Part of me not loathes it, but part of me shrinks a bit. Let me just tune into me and I'll give you who I feel I am at the moment, because that's the only thing I can really do. So, well, I'm a work in progress.
Okay.
I keep getting images of the sea, so I'm going to describe myself as though I'm the sea, and I'm part of the sea. So I'm like a rock with barnacles on. I'm like a sea urchin that you know grabs at little things for its food. I'm like the fish that clean up the bacteria and the grotty stuff from the big fish. They have a special name and I can't remember what it's called in English. I'm like the tide that moves in and out. I'm like huge waves, at times very powerful and at times very, very gentle. I go with the sun and the moon and I follow. I'm enormous. I'm a tiny drop. I'm... The sea would sum it up. I am in constant motion and a work in progress.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve with the work that you're doing now?
I want the whole world, every single one of the almost 7 billion human beings on this planet, to recognize, trust, and use their intuition fearlessly and proudly. Because if my life has taught me one thing, it is you seriously hamper your ability to reach your potential without it.
Mm.
Because intuition is the one thing that guides us to and through our breakthrough moments.
And in the last minute, how powerful are we as human beings?
Oh, God, unbelievable. Think of the biggest tsunami that's ever existed, the biggest volcano eruption that's ever existed, and multiply it a million times.
Hmm. Well, I'm hoping that we can harness that power and really change the world. Somebody has asked me, what is it that I want to, you know, to do with this radio program and even with my life, and even put it in the context. So are you talking about you want to change the world? And I just looked at him and says, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when I was a kid growing up, I was told you couldn't change the world, but you could change your little part in it. Well, that's true. That's true. But what I'm seeing,
that changes the world.
And that changes the world. Absolutely right. Susanna, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this segment of the program. And I want to encourage our listeners to join us for the after view. And once again, people can get a hold of you through thegapcoach.com. And Susanna Axiza is our guest here on Tell Me Your Story. And again, really appreciate your joining us here on this portion.
You're very, very welcome. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
And don't you folks go away. If you're listening to the archive or you're listening to the A2Zen.fm portion of the broadcast, there is more to come. I will thank you if you are listening to AM 1290 KZSB in Santa Barbara, California, for joining us, and encourage you to go to A2Zen or to the archives once this is recorded. Until next Saturday, a reminder, this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. Love, Talal.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share. A talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and Fast Forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
And we continue our conversation with Susanna Axiza, and we are talking about, I think what we're going to talk about, Susanna, is intuition, that still small voice. Now, I shared this concept with people, with one of my guests some months ago, about how if you listen to that still small voice, or the universal mind, or whatever you want to call it, it will never, ever, 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 ever lead you astray. It will never hurt you. It may challenge you, but you can trust it. And they said, yeah, but there are a lot of people who are hearing all kinds of voices in their head. How do you distinguish one from the other? So let's kind of start there once we have sifted through the various voices in our heads, if you will. Mm-hmm. How do we separate and get to that core intuition, that core voice that will never, ever, 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 ever lead us astray?
Yeah, I'd just like to add one thing. It will be a bit cheeky at times.
Okay.
So it will get you to do things where the result might be that, I mean, it certainly happened with me. I was told to do something that I have never done before because I was brought up that nice young ladies never tell, let a man understand that they're attracted to them. And my intuition told me that I had to go and tell someone that I was interested. I was petrified. But anyway, I did it because I was convinced that it would all work out. It did work out, but not in the way I thought, because what my intuition was trying to encourage me to do was to cut the cord with that person and move on. And it knew that the only way I was going to do that was to declare myself and have this person say, I do really like you, but not in that way.
Mm.
So I feel it's fair just to say, because it's happened to me doesn't necessarily mean it will happen to you. But your intuition will guide you to do things you absolutely need to be able to come to and through a breakthrough moment. And that's obviously what I needed. Mm-hmm. And this is what I mean when I say it will be a bit cheeky at times. In fact, I went through a period of about 5 years where I called my intuition the dastardly.
Well, mine was, and I use the term misguided in terms of the guidance that it was giving me. It didn't guide me incorrectly, but I was, and I've shared this example before, where I was bicycling. I used to live in Phoenix, Arizona, flatlands and farm fields where the transmitter site of the station I was working for was, and I bicycled to and from work. And I always liked to take different paths, even if it took me a little bit out of the way. But that day, I wanted a beeline. I wanted to go straight there. And I was getting this impression, okay, you need to turn right at the next corner. You need to turn right at the next corner. I went past the next corner, and I continued down for about a half a mile. And these farm fields were about a mile long, so there was no place else to turn. And the impression got stronger and stronger, and finally I thought, I got to turn around. I got to go back, and now it's a left turn. I went back. I made the left. I went up the mile and then over and continued on, and I got to the station in plenty of time and everything. I don't know what I avoided or didn't avoid. I have no clue as to the reason why that impression was so strong. All I know was that it got to a point where I couldn't. It was still my choice. I know that. But it was as if there was a concern on my part that if I didn't, something dire might happen. And yeah. I thought, I don't really want that. So I am going to turn around. And I guess maybe sometimes that is the way our intuition might work. Now, they're not the ones that generate the fear, but they might generate the concern if you don't make the adjustments or changes.
Well, for me, that is another form of intuition, which I call the useless map. And the useless map usually steps in when you're either at some form of physical risk or you're so stressed or traumatized or in fear that you can't think lucidly. And so you get a very simple instruction, like turn around. And it will be very matter of fact, but it will be repeated. It won't go away.
Mm.
And so in the end, you'll overcome your fear because you'll stop thinking this is crazy and you'll start thinking, well, this isn't going away. I need to do something with it. And I don't know how on earth it's going to benefit me, but I've got nothing to lose at this stage, so I'm going to follow it.
Mm. Now, I have, this may have nothing to do with the intuition, but I have had these thoughts that, I mean, as a man appreciating the female form, and I come across a lot of them in my business, in and out of the stations and so forth that I've worked for, and beautiful women, even those that I've interviewed who I've only seen pictures of and so forth. And on the one hand, I get this thought, I'd really like to tell this person how beautiful I think they are. But I don't do that. I do not do that because it's like, no, you don't want to cross. You don't want to cross some line that you may regret if you do cross that in that regard. And yet at the same time, I have to wonder if that impression is coming because this person needs a little boost, so to speak, in their self-esteem or self-worth because something just happened to them to knock them down a little bit. And they need a little support, if you will.
Mm.
I hadn't really thought of it in that context until now. But at the same time, there is that fear because our society is so afraid in the U.S., the PC crowd, that you don't do that. Unless you're in a relationship with them.
Yeah, I think this is such a pity. It stopped. I haven't lived in America, but that seems as though that's about to change. So I'm sort of quickly boning up on America. But
it's okay.
It's like, oh, okay, a move that I certainly hadn't planned and certainly not to go to America of all countries. But never mind, you know, this is where life is taking me, so mm-hmm. that's fine. But it does seem to me that you've lost something very precious. And the precious thing that you've lost is the simple joy in the beauty, physical or otherwise, of other people. And we all need strokes. Mm-hmm. And I don't literally mean physical strokes, but we all need to know that someone sees something in us.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you're beautiful or I think, you're so good at this. I really admire you. It makes us feel great. I remember one of my ex-partners, when he was living in New Zealand, he decided one day to say to every single person he met in Churchill, where he was living at the time, I love you, with a big smile on his face. And he could, because he has such an innocent face and a soft voice that he could, it would be impossible for a woman to take this the wrong way. And he said it also to their partners. And he said that, first of all, he got looks as if to say, whoa, weirdo alert. But then he just went on his way, big smile. And then he started that the energy suddenly changed. And whether it was his energy that changed, the recipient's energy that changed, or it was the combination of two, something magical happened. And when he said, I love you, with a big smile on his face, then the other person would just beam from ear to ear like the Cheshire Cat. And he said he did it all day.
Wow. I mean that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, well, he has never particularly been one for following the rules. He really follows Einstein's words, that if you want to solve a problem, using the same thinking that you use to create it ain't going to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, we quote that often on this program. Often.
So he broke the mold and he broke it beautifully. And
that's great.
And every so often I do it as well.
Wow.
And it's amazing what happens. So I think you guys have lost something very precious.
Well, you have the same feeling that I do in regards to America. And for those who are listening, it's only because I visited there. I visited the people and I love them and the country that I would, if there is a naturalization exchange program ever developed where I could exchange my citizenship in America for that for Ireland, I'm on the first boat.
You'd have to get used to drinking Guinness.
That's okay. I can handle Guinness. As a matter of fact, I even like their darker stout that they have out these days. But that's another subject. I love spending time in the pubs. As a matter of fact, I met a gentleman here who's from Ireland, who's from Dublin. He works in one of the coffee houses near the station where I work. And we chatted for a few moments and we joked a little bit about the way people view or hear the word when it's used in context, even when it's used in context about going to the pub and enjoying, you know, the people, the beer and the crack. And I remember when I heard that the first time, it didn't quite set right with him. Like, what?
No, because the crack's an Irish word.
Exactly. But I loved talking with him and sharing his remembrances and mine and I told him the same thing. I says, man, if there was an opportunity, I'm out of here, because I love that place so much, the weather, the people, the countryside, it's just fabulous, and that's where I hope to make my home base one day. And
good for you.
I really do believe that's going to happen, and I don't know when. And all I know is it is, and that's really all that matters at this particular point. I have no anxieties over, it's got to happen tomorrow, it's got to happen tomorrow. But the thing about this whole business of intuition, even in regard to my two sojourns to Ireland back 10 and 12 years ago, there was such a rightness about doing it. I even used to think, I'll never leave the continental United States. I mean, I'm stuck here. And then I end up on a cruise ship going down the Pacific, down to the Mexican Riviera to three different stops. And then a couple of years later, I went on a cruise to the Western Caribbean and so forth. So, okay, now I have left the continental United States. Oh, I'll never go to Europe. That's not going to. And it wasn't that I had any desire, but I just never thought about it. And then the next thing I know, there I am, my feet firmly planted on Irish soil. It's like, wow, this is, what else? What else? What else can I do? There are times when our intuition subtly leads us. And sometimes we think it's our choice, but it's actually your intuition leading us. And the next thing we know is, wow, how'd I get here? This is pretty neat. Do you find that happening?
Yes, absolutely. And I do think it is definitely our choice. And I'll tell you why, because I've searched long and hard for a definition of intuition that's simple, usable, and that makes sense no matter where you come to intuition from. So if you're strongly left brain, or if you're a spiritual seeker or whatever, it doesn't matter. And this is my definition of intuition. It's simply our ability to holistically process the massive amount of data that our body collects every second of every day. So for me, it's the meeting place of our left and right brains, because holistic thinking happens in the right brain. That's where the context comes in. Our head and our heart and our ego and our soul. Okay. Now, if you're a spiritual seeker, then I'd say to you, I might add the words, actually, I think it's the voice of your soul. So it is our choice. It's absolutely our choice that for me, it's time. It's a time in my life now where I'm morphing away from I'm transforming things I believe into things I know through scientific research. And so that's why America has suddenly reared its head, and that's become where I'm going to come to. Because great, fantastic, amazing research is being done in the States, so it's where I need to be. Mm. You know, it wasn't a conscious choice on my part. Things started happening, and I kept saying, no, I can't go to that university. You know, that's one of the best universities in the world. I'm not academically of the right stuff. But it wouldn't go away. Why? You know, nothing is wasted. Nothing is thrown away. Nothing is there for no reason. And so you just have to stay with it. And then a series of synchronicities happened, culminating in a dream that was so vivid, so visceral. I went, oh my God, that's why. Okay, well, get used to this, accept it. Now start consciously working towards it. You don't need to work out the details, but you do consciously need to set aside time every day to make this goal come true.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. I have found that I have been in the right place at the right time most of my life. I've not really fought that. It's not to say that when I've had those moments of change, or when there have been those periods when things weren't quite going the way that I wanted, that I didn't have some anxiety or even fear. There was one year in my career where I was laid off four times in one year. Four times. And the last job I was laid off from, I'd barely worked a day. And they called me up and said, well, we're not going to need you to come in because we're going to reallocate those funds in a different direction. And the first two times in the States, you can apply for unemployment. So the first two times I did, and you have to look for work at the same time, and you don't get your first check until after the first 2 weeks. Well, by the time the check was supposed to arrive, I'd gotten a job. Mm-hmm. I did that twice. So the second two times that I lost my job, I didn't even bother wasting my time and energy filing. I just went out and looked for another job, and I found it. And it led me, quite honestly, and it led me here after, almost 35 years in this business, a little over 53 years on the planet, just a scant puff of smoke in the vastness of time. And yet, who knows what's going to happen down the road? Absolutely, who knows? But I have those hopes and the dreams and the desires, as we all do, as we all do. And it's like, here's a phrase I want you to expound upon a little bit, that we all want change until it happens. It's like George Bush Jr., our last president. There were a lot of people, by the time his 8 years were up, they wanted him out of there. They did not want any more of these people in there. They wanted a fresh start, and that's why our first African-American president was elected. But boy, when we got this guy, the manure hit the fan. And there were people, oh my gosh. The name calling, as we've done with many of our presidents down through the last 40 or 50 or 60 years, and castigating them as, you know, the next Antichrist or something like this. But it's like, again, we don't like things the way they are. We want them to change. But are you sure you want them to change? Because you're not sure what you're going to get if they do.
And actually, I agree with you. I think in part it's because we tend to think in absolutes.
Mm.
You know, we're still in the old either or paradigm. It's one or the other. Mm-hmm. And in thinking in absolutes, when we think of change, we just think, well, we don't want this. We think of what we don't want instead of spending time to sit down and say, what do I do want? So, I mean, this happens in every aspect of our life. I hate my job. I want another one. Well, unless we actually sit down and just invest our time for a short while, and it really is only a short while, to say, what do I want from my new job? So that we're actually communicating with the universe. This is what I want. Bring me this. What do I want from my new president? What do I want from my new partner? Mm-hmm. We're so focused on the negative.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we bring more of the negative to us. So it might be a different form of what I don't want, but it's still what I don't want. Because we live in the paradigm still of process of elimination instead of process of inclusion. And that's what these new energies are about. They're about inclusion, acceptance, celebrating the differences instead of defending ourselves from them. So for me, this is all part of this huge paradigm shift, which I think most of us, including myself, haven't really got to grips with. We just haven't understood the enormity of this paradigm shift. It will change everything. The stuff that we've been doing for the last 30, 40 years in cognitive psychology to help clients accept themselves more and have more of a say in how they live their lives, it has in one way been the forerunner of this paradigm shift.
Hmm. Do you think, and what is your, and you can access your intuition if you like. Do you think that we have enough time?
Yeah. I said that without thinking. So that's, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I know
because
a lot.
Time's to be played with.
Yeah. I know a lot of people at this time last year were just going out of their minds. Because the Mayan calendar was coming to an end. I loved my wife's analysis of the Mayans and their calendar. That the guy that was chiseling out the stone of the wheels of the calendar, he got to a point and basically he threw up his hand and says, I'm done. I've had enough. I'm out of here. And left. And that's where the calendar ended.
Yeah. There's another version that says they ran out of stone.
They ran out of stone.
You know, and you talk to Mayan elders and they'll just say, well, that's as far as we got with our calculations. It doesn't mean anything other than that. Yeah. Stop reading into it. I mean, it was a massive fear game. It just shows you how prone to fear we are. It's our almost our default state.
Yeah.
So for me, I have to say that I had fun with the Mayan calendar, but I'm very lucky. I have an ascended master who's sort of, perched on my shoulder or in a suitcase when I travel, as one of my friends, said in Malaysia. It's never been a big deal for me. It's just signaled a turning point, and that's all. And I think the more we can bring ourselves out of the fear, and once we make the decision to do it, it's easier said than done. We make conscious choices not to turn on the on the news three times a day. We make conscious choices to turn it off if there's nothing but murder or, you know, shenanigans in government going on. You know, we make conscious choices about where we want to spend our time and energy, with who, and with what, and we follow through on those choices. We act on them, and we turn off the television, and we turn on the music that delights us, and we say no to friends who drain us of energy, and we say yes to those who support our growth. And it isn't being a Pollyanna, because I'm not suggesting that we don't follow the news anymore. Absolutely not. Because for me, the key word is, as always, balance. But we choose what is it helpful to us to know, and what really is going to tip us back into we're going to hell and back in a basket, and the basket's got a huge hole in the bottom that we're all falling through.
Hmm. Well, I was telling people months prior, do you remember what happened with Y2K 12 years ago?
Absolutely.
That's exactly what's going to happen with this. Nothing. I still remember that very day vividly. I was working for a news talk station back in Phoenix, and it was December 31st, 1999, and it was the afternoon, and it was a Friday. And I always went to the gas station to fill up the car on a Friday. So for me, this was normal.
Mm.
And I was in the station paying for the fuel. And a woman came in a little frantic, and she came in, oh, I better hurry. And I got that, 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 that. And I said, hold on, ma'am. I work for a news talk station, and we've been monitoring the other stations and reportings from the timeline on the planet, starting with Australia and Singapore and different places. Mm-hmm. And they're reporting nothing.
Mm.
Nothing is happening.
Mm.
And I remember hearing from a friend of mine who is very, very heavy into computers. And he said that back in the 50s, there was a woman who was involved with the computer industry, even back in the 50s. And she was one of the, I guess, geniuses, you know, in terms of the computer age. They asked her, because they knew the turn of the century was coming in 50 years or less. Is this going to be a problem in terms of rolling over to 2000? And her response basically was, no, not a problem. It is not a problem.
Fascinating.
And yet there were those who chose to make a quick buck off of the fears. But that seems to be the case when people are not willing to go seek out the facts in things. They just accept what they're being told, that delusion, if you will, that they're being fed.
I remember in the lead up to that, I was in Malaysia doing some work. One of the clients who had come to my weekend workshop when we were having lunch, he was telling me, asking me, you know, how often I came to Malaysia and where else I worked other than Kuala Lumpur. And we were just having a bit of a chat. And he said, you know, how did you get to this center? And I told him, and he said, oh, I'm going to start teaching. I've got a workshop coming up in a month's time. And I went, oh, well done you. What are you doing? And he said, I'm going to teach about Y2K, you know, the year 2000. And I went, oh, and what's your central premise? And he said, well, I'm basically going to advise everybody to sell up, to sell everything they've got.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And I in true sort of me style, I went, that's very interesting. And I didn't say anything. It wasn't appropriate. And he said, and I said, you know, and how did you arrive at this central premise? And he said what he'd been doing in his life and how he was preparing for it all, and that he'd sold everything and bought gold and it was all under the bed or wherever it was. I can't remember. And I said, you know, that's absolutely fascinating. I have to say that's not my experience at all. And of course, the workshop was cancelled because no one wanted to come to it or go to it, rather. Why am I not surprised?
Mm.
I mean, this fear is a big thing. In fact, I've just taken part in a fear summit, a free video summit that is going to be aired on this Monday. If you want to find out about it, then come onto my website and go onto the individuals page, and you'll see a fear summit, Conquering Fear. Click on the link there and you can get straight through to signing up for the summit. There's 21 world-class experts who are going to share their particular expertise on fear, how to work through it, how to dissolve it. And I'm really hugely honored because I'm one of the experts. But fear is so central to this change of energy on the planet, and the more we can do to accept it, stop fighting it and accept it, and then once we can accept it, then we can work through it and reframe it and go, fear is not something that's meant to stop me. This is just saying you're now stepping outside of your comfort zone, but hey, that's a good thing, because your comfort zone is keeping you small.
Mm, yeah. I have to say that it wasn't until after the turn into 2013 that I allowed myself to then watch some of the movies that had been created about 2012, the disaster films, and I could then watch them and just and marvel at the stupidity. But the earth is going to open up, earthquakes and floods and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. Typical Hollywood treatment, always based on fear. Well, not always, I'm generalizing, but that certainly was.
Well, it is rather fascinating. Of course, in the news industry, it's, you know, the phrase, if it bleeds, it leads. That is the way that goes. And I just sit there and I'm going, but it doesn't have to. That's why I love watching. I don't know if you get this there in Italy or not. I love watching The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and the Colbert Report. They are comedians. They are some of the funniest, but they're taking the real clips from the news and they're putting a humorous spin. And it was back in the, I think it was the late 80s or early 90s. I was sitting watching ABC Evening News with Peter Jennings. And as he's going rattling off the stories, I got to thinking, I wish we could have a laugh track behind the news.
Mm.
And bingo. And it is just absolutely hilarious. And he pokes fun at everybody. He doesn't lean one way or the other all the time. I think that what it does is it just shows the silliness in the way in which people behave and kind of opens that up because there's such irony. I mean, right now there's a story about one of the Tea Party Republicans who has been caught plagiarizing. And it's like, he's even quoted as saying that I've played, you know, 98% of my speeches are extemporaneous. Well, that means that 2% are not. They're plagiarized. Mm-hmm. And yet we have this big controversy here in the States about copyright infringement and free and what is it? Intellectual property rights. Mm-hmm. And yet in the Bible, it says that there is nothing new under the sun. So what are you going to do? Because you didn't say it first. It was said thousands of years before you ever got here. Absolutely. So now what are you going to do? Mm. And I take the same position when it comes to people who hold deeds for land. You don't own the land. There's a great line in an Irish song that says, you don't own the land. The land owns you.
Owns you. Mm. We're simply its custodians. I mean, yes. Any culture like the Aborigines, shamans will all tell you we are simply custodians.
Yeah. Well, I know that it is getting later and later there in Italy, so I don't want to keep you any longer, but I do want to thank you so much for taking this extra time in our afterview to share with our listeners. And I hope that when you do come to the States that and you find yourself maybe out on the West Coast, you might look us up here in Santa Barbara. We'll do an in-studio interview.
Well, I am actually, I know that I'm coming to California.
Okay.
And it will be somewhere around Berkeley or Stanford.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can't make arrangements one way or the other with technology the way that it is. I have my recording kit has gone from a large 4x4 box down to handheld. And it sounds even better than the 4x4 box that I used to carry around.
Yeah, I bet.
So there is always that possibility, and we look forward to that. And we certainly hope that...
Go ahead. I will certainly take you up on that. That would be great fun.
Wonderful.
I mean, I will do radio work at the drop of a hat. I absolutely adore it. And give me, you know, if anybody offers me even the vaguest possibility of talking about intuition, then, you know, I'm there. So, I it would be great to meet you in person, and it would absolutely be great to do another program together. Great. So I will take you up on that. I will let you know when I'm coming.
Great. Susanna Axiza, I want to thank you again. The website is thegapcoach.com. We encourage you to go there. One final question. Do you have a book or books out yet? Are you thinking of writing a book?
I'm actually in the process of writing two. One is an e-workbook, which is quite long. It's called Mind That Gap, and it's about the gap between the subconscious limiting habits, behaviors, beliefs, and what else,
and the your conscious dreams, aims, intentions, and desires. Based on God knows how many years of doing this work, both with corporate clients as a change management consultant for my sins and as a private, a coach to private individuals. And the second book, which I hope will be out by Easter, is actually a sort of question and answer session where an ex-client who's now become a friend and colleague of mine, who is French but lives in Norway, asks the master a lot of questions, and I channel the answers. It's called The Journey of a Master, not because it's his journey, because but more because it's as you read his words and you take the journey with him by asking the questions, then you too become more of the master that he says we all are.
Mm. Well, we will look forward to that, and we will have you back on when that book is released, and we'll look forward to talking with you again very soon.
That would be great, Richard. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and many thanks.
Susanna Axiza has been my guest. The website, once again, is thegapcoach.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.